A particular example of meeting Drala, in my personal experience, is flower arranging. Whatever branches you find, none of them is rejected as ugly. They can always be included. You have to learn to see their place in the situation. That is the key point. So you never reject anything. That is how to make a connection with the Dralas of reality. Drala energy is like the sun. If you look in the sky, the sun is there. By looking at it, you don't produce a new sun. You may feel that you created or made today's sun by looking at it, but the sun is eternally there. When you discover the sun in the sky, you begin to communicate with it. Your eyes begin to relate with the light of the sun. In the same way, Drala principle is always there. Whether you care to communicate with it or not, the magical strength and wisdom of reality are always there. That wisdom abides in the cosmic mirror. By relaxing the mind, you can reconnect with that primordial, original ground, which is always completely pure and simple. Out of that, through the medium of your perceptions, you can discover magic, or Drala. You can actually connect your own intrinsic wisdom with a sense of greater wisdom or vision beyond you. You might think that something extraordinary will happen to you when you discover magic. Something extraordinary does happen. You simply find yourself in the realm of utter reality, complete and thorough reality. How to rule. The warrior's journey of discovering the natural hierarchy of reality and his place in that world is both exalted and very simple. It is simple because it is so immediate and touching. It is touching your origin, your place in this world, the place you came from, and the place you belong. It is as if you were taking a long walk through the woods at twilight. You hear the sounds of birds and catch a glimpse of the fading light in the sky. You see a crescent moon and clusters of stars. You appreciate the freshness of the greenery and the beauty of wild flowers. In the distance, dogs are barking, children are crying, and occasionally you hear the sound of a car or a truck making its journey on the highway. As the wind begins to blow on your cheeks, you smell the freshness of the woodlands, and perhaps you startle an occasional rabbit or bird as you pass them by. As twilight goes on, memories of your husband, your wife, your children, your grandparents, your world come back to you. You remember your first schoolroom, where you learned to spell and read and write. You remember tracing the letters I and O, M and A. You are walking in the forest of the Dralas, but still there is a feeling that this woodland is surrounded by other living human beings. Yet when you listen, you hear only the sound of your own footsteps. Right, left, right, left. A crackle when you step on a dry twig. When you walk into this world of reality, the greater or cosmic world, you will find the way to rule your world. But at the same time, you will also find a deep sense of aloneness. It is possible that this world could become a palace or a kingdom to you, but as its king or queen, you will be a monarch with a broken heart. It is not a bad thing to be, by any means. In fact, it is the way to be a decent human being, and beyond that, a glorious human being who can help others. This kind of aloneness is painful, but at the same time, it is beautiful and real. Out of such painful sadness, a longing and a willingness to work with others will come naturally. You realize that you are unique. You see that there is something good about being you as yourself. Because you care for yourself, you begin to care for others who have nurtured your existence, or have made their own journey of warriorship, paving the way for you to travel this path. Therefore, you feel dedication and devotion to the lineage of warriors, brave people, whoever they have been, who have made this same journey. And at the same time, you begin to care for all those who have yet to take this path, because you have seen that it is possible for you. You realize that you can help others to do the same. You begin to see that there are seasons in your life in the same way as there are seasons in nature. There are times to cultivate and create, when you nurture your world and give birth to new ideas and ventures. There are times of flourishing and abundance when life feels in full bloom, energized and expanding. And there are times of fruition when things come to an end. They have reached their climax and must be harvested before they begin to fade. And finally, of course, there are times that are cold and cutting and empty. Times when the spring of new beginnings seems like a distant dream. Those rhythms in life are natural events. They weave into one another as day follows night, bringing not messages of hope and fear, but messages of how things are. If you realize that each phase of your life is a natural occurrence, then you need not be swayed, pushed up and down by the changes in circumstance and mood that life brings. You find that you have all opportunity to be fully in the world at all times, and to show yourself as a brave and proud individual in any circumstance. Normally, there appears to be a conflict between survival and celebration. Survival, taking care of your basic needs, is based on pragmatism, exertion, and often drudgery. Celebration, on the other hand, is often connected with extravagance and doing something beyond your means. The notion of ruling your world is that you can live in a dignified and disciplined way, without frivolity, and at the same time enjoy your life. You can combine survival and celebration. The kingdom that you are ruling is your own life. It is a householder's kingdom. Whether or not you have a husband or wife and children, still there is a structure and pattern to your daily life. Many people feel that the regularity of life is a constant imposition. They would like to have a different life, or a different menu, every second, at every meal. It is necessary to settle down somewhere and work at having a regular, disciplined life. The more discipline that occurs, however, the more joyous life can be. So the pattern of your life can be a joyous one, a celebration, rather than obligation alone. That is what it means to rule the kingdom of your life. The notion of kingdom here is that your life is potentially wealthy and good. There's a great deal of misunderstanding about wealth. Generally, being wealthy means that you have lots of money. But the real meaning of wealth is knowing how to create a gold-like situation in your life. That is to say, you may have only $20 in your bank account, but you can still manifest richness in your world. Interestingly, if you are lost in the desert without food and water, even if you have lots of gold in your pack, you can't eat it and you can't drink it, so you are still starved and parched. That is analogous to what happens to many people who have money. They have no idea how to eat it and how to drink it. Once I heard a story about an Indian chief who struck oil on his property and became rich. He decided to buy 20 basins and bathtubs at once as a sign of his wealth. People can spend thousands of dollars and still be dissatisfied and in tremendous pain. Even with all that supposed wealth, they may still be unable to enjoy a simple meal. True wealth does not come about automatically. It has to be cultivated. You have to earn it. Otherwise, if you have lots of money, you will still be starved. So if you want to rule your world, please don't think that it means you have to spend a great deal of money. Rather, true wealth comes from using manpower, individual power. If your suit has lots of lint, don't send it to the cleaners right away. Clean it yourself. That is much less expensive, and also more dignified. You put your own energy and effort into caring for your world. The key to wealth, or the golden key, is appreciating that you can be poor, or I should say, unmoneyed, and still feel good, because you have a sense of wealthiness in any case already. That is the wonderful key to richness and the first step in ruling, appreciating that wealth and richness comes from being a basically decent human being. You do not have to be jealous of those who have more, in an economic sense, than you do. You can be rich, even if you are poor. That twist is a very interesting one, and very powerful in terms of how to deal with world problems. Too often, the politics of this world are based on poverty. If people are poor, they want to take money or resources away from those who have more. And if people are wealthy, in the sense of having money, then they want to hold on to what they have, because they think that giving up some of their money will make them impoverished. With that mentality on both sides, it is difficult to imagine any fundamental change taking place. Or if it does take place, it is based on tremendous hatred and violence because both sides are hanging on so tightly to what they think is important. Of course, if you are starving, then what you want is food. In fact, food is what you need. But the genuine desires of those who are in need can be ruthlessly manipulated. War based on grasping has happened over and over again in this world. People with money have been willing to sacrifice thousands of human lives to hold on to their wealth. And on the other side, people in need have been willing to massacre their fellows for a grain of rice, a hope for a penny in their pocket. Mahatma Gandhi asked the Indian people to embrace nonviolence and to renounce clinging to foreign ways, which they associated with wealth and prosperity. Since most Indians wore cloth that was British made, he asked them to give up wearing British cloth and weave their own. This proclamation of self-sufficiency was one way, and a powerful one, of promoting dignity based not on material possessions, but on one's inherent state of being. But at the same time, with every respect for Gandhi's vision of non-aggression, which he calls satyagraha, or seizing the truth, we should not confuse his message with extreme asceticism. In order to find one's inherent wealth, it is not necessary to renounce all material possessions and worldly pursuits. If a society is to have a sense of command and being ruled, then someone has to wear the three-piece suit at the negotiating tables. Someone has to wear a uniform to keep the peace. The basic message of the Shambhala teachings is that the best of human life can be realized under ordinary circumstances. That is the basic wisdom of Shambhala, that in this world, as it is, we can find a good and meaningful human life that will also serve others. That is our true richness. At a time when the world faces the threat of nuclear destruction and the reality of mass starvation and poverty, ruling our lives means committing ourselves to live in this world as ordinary but fully human beings. The image of the warrior in the world is indeed precisely this. In a practical sense, how can we bring the sense of richness and ruling into our ordinary lives? When the warrior has achieved a certain mentality, having understood the basic principles of dignity and gentleness thoroughly, as well as having an appreciation for the Drala principle, then he or she should reflect on the general sense of wealth or richness in his life. The basic practice of richness is learning to project the goodness that exists in your being so that a sense of general goodness shines out. That goodness can be reflected in the way your hair is combed, the way your suit fits, the way your living room looks, and whatever there is in your immediate world. Then it is possible to go further and experience greater richness by developing what are called the seven riches of the universal monarch. These are very ancient categories, first used in India to describe the qualities of a ruler. In this case, we are talking about developing these qualities individually, personally. The first richness of the ruler is to have a queen. The queen, or we could say wife or husband if you like, represents the principle of decency in your household. When you live with someone with whom you can share your life, both your wisdom and your negativities, it encourages you to open up your personality. You don't bottle things up. However, a Shambhala person does not have to be married. There is always room for bachelors. Bachelors are friends to themselves, as well as having a circle of friends. The basic principle is to develop decency and reasonability in your relationships. The second richness of the universal monarch is the minister. The principle of the minister is having a counselor. You have your spouse who promotes your decency, and then you have friends who provide counsel and advice. It is said that the minister should be inscrutable. The sense of inscrutability here is not that your friends are devious or difficult to figure out, but that they do not have a project or goal in mind that clouds their friendship with you. Their advice or help is open-ended. The third richness is the general, who represents fearlessness and protection. The general is also a friend who is fearless because he or she has no resistance to protecting you and helping you out, doing whatever is needed in a situation. The general is a friend who will actually care for you, as opposed to one who provides counsel. The fourth richness is the steed, or horse. The steed represents industriousness, working hard and exerting yourself in situations. You don't get trapped in laziness, but you constantly go forward and work with situations in your life. The fifth richness is the elephant, which represents steadiness. You are not swayed by the winds of deception or confusion. You are steady like an elephant. At the same time, an elephant is not rooted like a tree trunk. It walks and moves. So you can walk and move forward with steadiness, as though riding an elephant. The sixth richness of the ruler is the wish-granting jewel, which is connected with generosity. You don't just hold on to the richness that you achieve by applying the previous principles, but you let go and give by being hospitable, open, and humorous. Number seven is the wheel. Traditionally, the ruler of the entire universe holds a gold wheel, while the monarch who rules this earth alone receives an iron wheel. The rulers of Shambhala are said to have held the iron wheel because they ruled on this earth. On a personal level, the wheel represents command over your own world. You take your seat properly and fully in your life, so that all of the previous principles can work together to promote richness and dignity in your life. By applying these seven principles of richness, you can actually handle your family life properly. You have a wife or husband which promotes decency. You have close friends who are your advisors. And you have your guardians or companions who are fearless in loving you. Then you have exertion in your journey, in your work, which is represented by the horse. You ride on your energy all the time. You never give up on any of the problems in your life. But at the same time, you have to be earthy, steady, like an elephant. Then, having all of those, you don't just feel self-satisfied, but you become generous to others, like the wish-granting gem. Because of that, you rule your household completely. You hold the wheel of command. That is the vision of how to run your household in an enlightened fashion. Having done that, you feel that your life is established properly and fully. You feel that a golden rain is continuously descending. It feels solid, simple, and straightforward. Then you also have a feeling of gentleness and openness, as though an exquisite flower has bloomed auspiciously in your life. In whatever action you perform, whether accepting or rejecting, you begin to open yourself to the treasury of Shambhala wisdom. The point is that when there is harmony, then there is also fundamental wealth. Although at that particular point you might be penniless, there is no problem. You are suddenly, eternally rich. If you want to solve the world's problems, you have to put your own household, your own individual life in order first. That is somewhat of a paradox. People have a genuine desire to go beyond their individual cramped lives to benefit the world. But if you do not start at home, then you have no hope of helping the world. So the first step in learning how to rule is learning to rule your household, your immediate world. There is no doubt that if you do so, then the next step will come naturally. If you fail to do so, then your contribution to this world will be further chaos. The Universal Monarch. We have discussed the possibility of discovering magic, or drala, and how that discovery can allow us to transform our existence into an expression of sacred world. Although in some respects, all of these teachings are based on very simple and ordinary experiences, at the same time, you might feel somewhat overwhelmed by this perspective, as though you were surrounded by monumental wisdom. You still might have questions about how to go about actualizing the vision of warriorship. Is it simply your personal willpower and exertion which bring about the courage to follow the path of the Shambhala warriors? Or do you just imagine that you are seeing the great eastern sun and hope for the best, that what you have seen is it? Neither of these will work. We have seen in the past that some people try to become warriors with an intense push, but the result is further confusion, and the person uncovers layer upon layer of cowardice and incompetence. If there is no sense of rejoicing in magical practice, you find yourself simply driving into the high wall of insanity. The way of the warrior, how to be a warrior, is not a matter of making amateurish attempts, hoping that one day you will be a professional. There is a difference between imitating and emulating. In emulating warriorship, the student of warriorship goes through stages of disciplined training and constantly looks back and re-examines his own footprints or handiwork. Sometimes you find signs of development, and sometimes you find signs that you missed the point. Nevertheless, this is the only way to actualize the path of the warrior. The fruition of the warrior's path is the experience of primordial goodness, or the complete unconditional nature of basic goodness. This experience is the same as the complete realization of egolessness, or the truth of non-reference point. The discovery of non-reference point, however, comes only from working with the reference points that exist in your life. By reference points here, we simply mean all of the conditions and situations that are part of your journey through life. Washing your clothes, eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner, paying bills. Your week starts with Monday, and then you have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You get up at 6 a.m., and then the morning passes, and you have noon, afternoon, evening, and night. You know what time to get up, what time to take a shower, what time to go to work, what time to eat dinner, and what time to lie down and go to sleep. Even a simple act like drinking a cup of tea contains many reference points. You pour yourself a cup of tea. You pick up a spoonful of sugar and bring it towards your teacup. You dip the spoon into the cup and stir it around so that the sugar becomes thoroughly mixed with the tea. You put the spoon down. You pick up the cup by its handle and bring it towards your mouth. You drink a little bit of tea, and then you put the cup down. All of those processes are simple and ordinary reference points that show you how to conduct your journey through life. Then you have reference points that are connected with how you express your emotions. You have love affairs. You have quarrels. And sometimes you get bored with life, so you read a newspaper or watch television. All of those emotional textures provide reference points in conducting your life. The principles of warriorship are concerned, first of all, with learning to appreciate those processes, those mundane reference points. But then, by relating with the ordinary conditions of your life, you might make a shocking discovery. While drinking your cup of tea, you might discover that you are drinking tea in a vacuum. In fact, you are not even drinking the tea. The hollowness of space is drinking tea. So while doing any little ordinary thing, that reference point might bring an experience of non-reference point. When you put on your pants or your skirt, you might find that you are dressing up space. When you put on your makeup, you might discover that you are putting cosmetics on space. You are beautifying space. Pure nothingness. In the ordinary sense, we think of space as something vacant or dead. But in this case, space is a vast world that has capabilities of absorbing, acknowledging, and accommodating. You can put cosmetics on it, drink tea with it, eat cookies with it, polish your shoes in it. Something is there. But ironically, if you look into it, you can't find anything. If you try to put your finger on it, you find that you don't even have a finger to put. That is the primordial nature of basic goodness. And it is that nature which allows a human being to become a warrior, to become the warrior of all warriors. The warrior, fundamentally, is someone who is not afraid of space. The coward lives in constant terror of space. When the coward is alone in the forest and doesn't hear a sound, he thinks there is a ghost lurking somewhere. In the silence, he begins to bring up all kinds of monsters and demons in his mind. The coward is afraid of darkness because he can't see anything. He is afraid of silence because he can't hear anything. Cowardice is turning the unconditional into a situation of fear by inventing reference points or conditions of all kinds. But for the warrior, unconditionality does not have to be conditioned or limited. It does not have to be qualified as either positive or negative, but it can just be neutral, as it is. The setting sun world is afraid of space, afraid of the truth of non-reference point. In that world, people are afraid to be vulnerable. They are afraid to expose their flesh, bone, and marrow to the world outside. They are afraid to transcend the conditions or reference points they have set up for themselves. In the setting sun world, people believe absolutely in their reference points. They think that if they open themselves, they will be exposing an open wound to germs and disease. A hungry vampire may be nearby and smell the blood and come to eat them up. The setting sun world teaches that you should guard your flesh and blood, that you should wear a suit of armor to protect yourself. But what are you really protecting yourself from? Space. If you succeed in encasing yourself completely, you may feel secure, but you will also feel terribly lonely. This is not the loneliness of the warrior, but the loneliness of the coward, the loneliness of being trapped in the cocoon, cut off from basic human affection. You don't know how to take off your suit of armor. You have no idea how to conduct yourself without the reference point of your own security. The challenge of warriorship is to step out of the cocoon, to step out into space, by being brave and at the same time gentle. You can expose your wounds and flesh, your sore points. Usually, when you have a wound, you put a band-aid on it until it heals. Then you take off the bandage and expose the healed flesh to the world outside. In this case, you expose an open wound, open flesh, unconditionally. You can be completely raw and exposed with your husband or your wife, your banker, your landlord, anyone you meet. Out of that comes an extraordinary birth, the birth of the universal monarch. The Shambhala definition of a monarch is someone who is very raw and sensitive, willing to open his or her heart to others. That is how you become a king or queen, the ruler of your world. The way to rule the universe is to expose your heart so that others can see your heart beating, see your red flesh, and see the blood pulsating through your veins and arteries. Ordinarily, we think of a king in the negative sense, as someone who holds himself apart from others, hiding in his palace and creating a kingdom to shield himself from the world. Here we are speaking of opening yourself to other human beings in order to promote human welfare. The monarch's power in the Shambhala world comes from being very soft. It comes from opening your heart so that you share your heart with others. You have nothing to hide, no suit of armor. Your experience is naked and direct. It is even beyond naked. It is raw, uncooked. This is the fruition of warriorship, the complete primordial realization of basic goodness. At that level, there is absolutely no doubt about basic goodness, or therefore about yourself. When you expose your naked flesh to the universe, can you say, "Should I put a second skin on? Am I too naked?" You can't. At that point, there is no room for second thoughts. You have nothing to lose and nothing to gain. You simply expose your heart completely.